Hello, Dr. Ray.
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
Thank you for empowering me.
Here's what I think is going on.
I think you're a hoot and a half.
My idea, my theory, my guidance is a bit of a stretch.
I just love your show.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are really smart.
I am sensitive and understanding and nurturing.
Your show to me is like a comedy information show.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
And that is exactly why I am so sensitive. I made her feel worse. Not intending to. And sometimes good advice does make you feel worse, does it not? I'm hoping that's the angle I took. Good to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. This is our Monday version, most of the time a Monday version. E-Person Monday, where we take... Notice how I include you in this? Kind of this plural pronoun, sort of a sharing of the experience. We take your missives, your E-Persons, that come in, and there's a lot of them, and I attempt to analyze, read between the lines, give some thoughts and ideas. I don't typically read the E-person and say, okay, here's what I think. No, I enjoy each line, and then in between what you might be implying, to analyze it. And as I've said before, many of these E-persons I've culled from weeks ago. And as a result, I don't remember exactly where the E-person goes. And sometimes I try to figure that out within the first five or six lines and come to some conclusions. And then I'm really excited if I got it right. And if I didn't get it right, I'm not going to tell you. So, we'll get to those momentarily. I used to do a ton of speaking engagements to schools. School districts, principal associations, special ed groups, teacher training workshops. Just did a boatload of that stuff. Well, I'm doing very, very little of it now. That's not exactly right. It isn't very, very little. It's zero. I looked at my schedule. Looked at the speaking schedule as it unfolds. 99.9999999% Catholic groups. That was not the way it used to be. It used to be about 10-15% Catholic, a third total different types of Christians, churches, a third schools, various school situations, PTOs, principal conferences, retreats, and then a third just other stuff, hospitals, Kiwanis groups. For years and years it was that way. And then, with the internet and people essentially searching you via the internet, I get zero calls for talks anymore through the phone. Zero. Every single one comes through the contact page, my contact page on my website. If someone goes to that website, they see that I'm involved with Catholic media and they are a school district. That's it. That's the kiss of death. Why? Because in their mind, they don't want to book someone that is quote-unquote religious. Now, the irony is, I used to do a lot of the same type, exactly the same type stuff, without direct religious language, without any allusions to Christianity. It was a very traditional, solid, put parents, put teachers back in charge. Got tons and tons and tons. But you see how they operate? They operate out of a cliche. They operate out of a stereotype. Nope, can't book that guy. I have actually had evangelical Christian groups refuse me. They booked me and then later called and canceled. Why? Because I was Catholic. Now, that is not what this monologue is about. It's a lead-up to. I was doing a teacher in-service was put on by a group that offered these kinds of continuing education programs to teachers. These were already in-class folks. And one of the things I was talking about was a written essay of apology, a written essay of analyzing the behavior the child did, what were alternatives to what he did, and what could he do better in the future. There's a little semi-formal structure of a handwritten essay from a child. After that particular in-service, I was told by the man who sets up these in-services, don't use writing. Do not use writing. Now, this guy's a psychologist. I said, why is that? Well, because obviously we want children to love writing. So if you pair it with punishment, you're going to turn them off toward writing. It sounds like it makes sense, doesn't it? Sounds kind of theoretical. Wow. Boy, I never looked at it that way. But all too often, under scrutiny, under deeper analysis, these kinds of shallow theories fall apart. For example, one of the things that I said to a teacher group once, was how many here teach literature? How many here teach grammar and composition? And several hands went up. I said, why don't you do this? At the beginning of the year, why don't you tell the students, I do not want to threaten you with a grade. I want you to turn in only those assignments that you wish to turn in. I want you to love writing for writing's sake. So therefore, I don't want anyone to write under a dark cloud of getting an F if they don't turn in an assignment. Turn in what you wish for the sake and the love of writing. Now, I was already looking at some snickers in that audience, and I asked, quite honestly, how many would you have turning in assignments by the end of the 9 weeks? And the answers were various. Zero. I said, wait a minute, aren't you worried? Aren't you worried that under pain of force of a bad grade, you're making these children write? You're going to turn them off toward writing. It would be better if you didn't have a grammar and composition class. Let it go. Let's just hope they learn to write, well, because they want to. There was a man, a very famous author, and he supposedly was giving a speech to young writers, how to be better writers. He got up there, and the first thing he said is, you want to all be better writers? Then why are you here? Go home and write. Writing is a discipline. It's an incredible discipline. Those of you who have to write something, whether it's a little speech for church, sometimes even if it's a letter that you have to deal with a touchy subject. People write letters anymore? Okay, an email. It's hard, isn't it? I've written 15, 16 books. I probably have edited each book 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times before I get it to the point where I want it. Writing is the hardest thing that I do, by far. I would rather lift weights and push against heavy gravity than to sit for 2 hours and try to put thoughts on paper in a coherent way. But it's a discipline. My daughter Hannah had a multitude of essays, shall we say, when she was growing up. She's grown up now. She's a lawyer, JAG lawyer in the Army. And Hanny does a lot of writing, a ton of writing. She's a very good writer, too. Learned a lot of skills in writing. The idea that if you use something as discipline, it's going to turn the person off could be extrapolated to a whole bunch of things. Stand a child in a corner? You're going to make them cornerphobic? You're going to make him hate corners? What if you make him apologize to his sister? Is he going to hate all women? Growing up, I had to apologize to my sister. I'll never, ever apologize to my wife because I had to apologize to my sister. What if you use chores as discipline? You're going to be a slob when he grows up because he just doesn't want to do any chores. That's it. I mean, you really soured him towards chores. That's it. You take him to Mass. Sometimes he doesn't want to go, but you're going to take him. Uh-oh. Look what you're doing. You're making him do something he doesn't want to do. Now he's going to not go to Mass when he's 26. Of course, he's thrown that one in your face a lot, but you can ignore that because that's a lie. It's not the way it is. It's, I want to leave religion for a whole lot of other reasons, and I'm going to punish my mom and dad by saying, you made me go to church, and that's why I don't go to church. That's nonsense. Deal with it in another monologue. It is flagrantly false to say that a child who has to write an essay of apology or analyzing of what he did and should do better next time. Notice how I'm using a lot of he's. I could get in trouble for this, couldn't I? It's flagrantly false to say that that will ultimately get him to a point where he doesn't want to write. How many kids just write for the sake of writing? Very, very few. They have to have practice at it, and they have to find out that they could be good at it. It's the nature. It's the nature of the exercise. One final point. There's a woman from Poland that I knew. She wrote some of the most fantastic emails to me that I'd ever seen. You could tell this woman, she was getting her PhD. I'm sure she's got it already by now. PhD in literature and some type of grammatical composition. I wasn't sure exactly what it was. She tells me the story of her professor, her college professor, went into one of their advanced writing classes and told the students, you are all pursuing a career in some type of writing, some type of composition, some type of journalism, something. You should not have to be forced to write under penalty of grades. So, no one in this class will be required to write. You will turn in assignments as I give them, and if you choose to do them, you finish them out and you turn them in. My friend said that her initial reaction and her peers was, wow, isn't that mature? What a great idea. They're not going to treat us like kids. Absolutely. They're going to allow us to have internal motivation to fix it all up. And she said for the first few weeks, assignments got turned in. Then there was slippage. More and more, the students were turning in less assignments. And she made the observation that among a select group, graduate-level students in some type of writing profession, when not required to write, slowly didn't. And she said, if that's the case with us, how likely is that for anybody? When I write, I don't necessarily like sitting down and writing. I like the end product. I like turning it into a typist and saying, that's done. I like that turn of the phrase. I like that comment. I like that parallel. But that takes a while to get there. Never worry about turning your children off toward writing. They need the practice. I'm Dr. Ray.
I really like to listen to your show. It's a breath of fresh air.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
The idea that the United States of America should now be a nation in high-handed rebellion against God makes me choke. I mean, there are some people who seem to think that the problem in America is simply between conservatives and liberals, between Democrats and Republicans. But these group distinctions are not the most important distinction. The real division is between those who are being drawn to Christ and those who are fleeing Him. All humans are created in the image of God, and we are made for a loving relationship with our Creator. Any human being will never find their full fulfillment apart from God. And those of us who are united to Christ by faith and baptism in His mission of redemption owe everyone we meet the love and consideration that helps draw them closer to their eternal lover.
Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Ave Maria Radio and the Ave Maria Radio app.
Me here on The Doctor Is In, the Sea Person Monday. Diving right into it. My son is coping with depression and anxiety, which, by the way, depression and anxiety are a dynamic duo. They are often found together. He's coping with depression and anxiety with self-medicating. Now, I don't know what kind of self-medicating that is, because normally people think self-medicating alcohol. But then she says, with self-medicating and drinking. So I'm not sure if he's getting prescriptions. I'm not sure if he's finding ways to get prescriptions, out of what he's doing. Anyway, he blames this experience because my husband was not happy that I was not giving him daily affirmation and attention when I was working full-time raising children. All right, so you have a mom here who worked full-time for whatever their reasons, and the son, who's now struggling in life, is blaming mom. You didn't affirm me enough. You didn't give me enough accolades and attention. Here we go. He learned this in college. Taking psychology. Yeah. How many parents have come to me and said, my daughter's taking a psychology class and she's coming home and she's telling us all the things we did wrong when we were raising her. Or she's coming home and she's telling us all the ways we're not parenting our younger children right. Ain't that the truth? He assumes he learned the wrong example from me because, in current culture, girlfriends expect constant attention. Now, I don't necessarily agree with that, but that's what he concluded. So, therefore, he extrapolated that to himself and said, you didn't give me the right dosage of attention and affirmation. Now, keeping in mind, someone might say, well, Dr. Ray, maybe she didn't. Maybe she was a neglectful mother. Maybe she was working. Maybe she was exhausted. Maybe she just didn't give this kid the kind of love and attention he needed. It's always a possibility. But here's a mom who's writing an email and saying, this is what he accuses me of. I think it's less likely that she did give him some attention. It's just, in his mind, it wasn't enough. Because he's making a mess of his own life, and he's got to point the finger somewhere. And the number one place the finger gets pointed is at mom and dad. This is happening all over the place with young adults. I'm making a mess of my life, and you know why? Because of you, mom, you, dad. Boy, I tell you what, any of my kids accuse me of that, I'm just going to blow it off. There's no way. Because I feel reasonably certain, with all of my human frailty, I did what I could as a dad. I explained to him that needing constant attention does not mean that it's healthy. And I further explained that a relationship is complex. I then explained that it isn't good for others, meaning probably college profs or peers or those in his psychology class, to tell a son that his mother has unhealthy relationship habits. I think what she means is his mother fell short. His mother was deficient in affirming him. That is judgmental. It is blaming. And it is undermining his family and trust in his mother. Mom, I don't know where your son's going to go with all this, but I would suspect that in his mind, you fell short, and you're falling short, as he defines it now, means that this is why he's doing the self-medicating and he's doing the drinking. It's laid at your feet. Two things I would say. One, resist being emotionally blackmailed. Dr. Ray, how can you say that? Maybe she fell short. I'm going to assume that this writer did not set out to say, let me see if I can deny my son affection and attention to a significant enough degree that when he grows up, he's going to turn to alcohol and drugs because I was warped in my motherhood. I don't think she set out to do that. I'm seeing a lot of lack of mercy among young adults. They don't look back and say, hey, my mom did the best she could. My mom was human. My mom struggled. My dad struggled. They had a tough time of it. They had their own matters that they struggled with. You know, I gotta understand that. I gotta give them some tolerance. I gotta give them some leeway and room. When I hear that from a young adult, I so much respect that viewpoint. But I gotta tell you, I'm more often likely to hear that from a young adult who is doing okay in their lives, who looks back and says, for all of my parents' humanness, all of what I decide is their shortcomings and their failures, they did very much their best. That usually comes from young adults who are pretty put together. The ones who are less put together are also less likely to look at their parents and give them the benefit of the doubt and say, that was my mom, that was my dad, they were raising me in a different time, they had these attitudes about child rearing, they did the best they could given their limited knowledge and understanding. That is a merciful look back view. It truly is. And any of you young adults that could be listening to this, you might want to think about that, not just for the sake of your parents, but for your own peace.
Research has shown that the best communication, get your bottom to bed, is not only obvious, but more subtle, eat your broccoli, and subliminal, wash your hands after the bathroom. Therefore, in my ongoing endeavor to better help others toward more enlightened interactions, what were you born in a barn? Shut the door. I will, from this point forward, utilize all levels of conscious and unconscious verbalizations. Call the program right now.
My anxiety problems started pretty early. When I turned 2, I remember being very anxious. I was looking at my birthday cake, and I thought to myself, I've just doubled my age in a year. 1 year, I doubled how old I was. And if this keeps up, by the time I'm 16, I'm sorry, by the time I'm 6, I'll be 90. Okay, I didn't really think that because most memories don't go much beyond before age 3. And those are just tiny little snapshots. But I thought it was a great look at anxiety. Dr. Ray, I was hoping for some help with my 4-year-old boy. Recently, he's become defiant and destructive, particularly at school. He's in preschool. At home, this isn't such a problem. But he's not been the best at home either. All right, so the question becomes, what's going on that this little boy is becoming more defiant? Now, let me give a few explanations. Sometimes parents discipline in the past. What do I mean by that? Well, at age 3, he didn't really require a firmer hand. He's 4 now. He does require a firmer hand. And we take a while to catch up. So in the meantime, the child is doing some things, and our response is not quite as up to the level of what he's doing, and then he develops habits. At school, he doesn't want to be quiet at nap time or have to wear a mask. And in our state, all kids are required to wear masks at school. So this little 4-year-old has to wear a mask. Don't get me started. He doesn't wear a mask anyplace else. He has to wear it at school. When he refused to be quiet, he was told to go to a chair and time out. He grabbed the chair and flung it. I was called to come and get him, as he was being a danger to other people's safety. We've talked to him, and the only thing we can get out of him is, I wanted to, or I didn't want to do that, or I don't know, or I just did, when we ask him why. Let me jump in. If you want to know why a little kid does what he does, probably the worst person to ask is the little kid. He doesn't know. His attitude is, no, I don't know, just felt like doing it. Insight is something that even grown-ups don't have a lot of sometimes. To expect a 4-year-old or 5-year-old or 6-year-old or 7-year-old to know why they did something, you're going to get, I don't know. Or teenagers, oh no. I-U-N-N-O, oh no. Or they're going to flex their shoulders like it's a reflex arc that goes through their spinal cord, you know. So when you ask, the best answer you're going to get is, I just did it. And that's okay, because he doesn't know why he did it. Situation presented itself. So the first thing I would say is don't worry about not knowing why. Well, you got one explanation in the masks. The mask breathing hot air all day long when you're 4 years old, this just ain't cool. Let's see. Today, interesting. See, this is what I mean when I speculate what's coming up before I even read this again a second time. Today he broke his mask. Now that's a piece. That's a commentary, isn't it? And he used his backup mask, had a backup mask, you know, as a slingshot. And was being defiant again. We have tried both negative, taking toys away, and positive. Sticker systems, trying to earn a toy. Reinforcement, sending it to bed early, even spanking. Nothing seems to work. Okay. Nothing is working is probably one of the most common lines I hear from parents who are frustrated with discipline because, 1, generally they're not very consistent with it. 2, they pinball parent. They bounce from this to that to this to that to this to that, trying to find the magic key that's going to make this child stop this. 3, they really probably don't respond firmly enough. For example, Dad had to go get him because he chucked the chair. I like that. Chuck the chair. Dad had to go get him. What happened when he came home? Now, see, if it were me, he'd be done with everything. Nothing. Everything would be gone. And for supper, he certainly wouldn't get the food he likes. No, not at all. I had to come and get you at preschool because you chucked a chair. No. There's all going to be all kinds of things going to happen to you. We're not going to take a toy away. I'm not going to take one stuffed animal out of your 22 away. I'm not going to say, okay, you got to go to bed at 9 o'clock, half an hour early. No. There's going to be multi-consequences here. Dad says, it's not like we can black him out. Why can't you? And then he says, because we really don't have the technology to begin with. Well, you don't need technology to black out. Blackout's everything. Blackouts outside. Blackouts toys. Blackouts games. Blackouts stuffed animals. Blackouts favorite shirt. Blackouts favorite cup. Blackout is dessert. Blackout is the food you like. Blackout is driving through McDonald's and you getting a sundae and he doesn't. What I would personally do is I'd set up a system with the preschool people. Just excellent, good, fair, poor. I want to know what kind of day he had at preschool and then I'm going to deal with it at home. He comes home with a poor, he's blacked out. That's it, and he's gone to bed early. He comes home with a fair, I'll take about 3 privileges away. He comes home with a good, standard privileges, no more, no less. He comes home with an excellent, I'll find a reward somewhere. That's it. I'm going to link me to the school. My experience has been, preschool people are good people, but they're not really very discipline-oriented. They follow a lot of child development ideas, and whatever discipline they use is usually kind of benign and soft and come let us reason together, come let us all get along. And as a result, if you get a kid who reads through that, he's going to push him. There's just no question he's going to push him. We have tried to get him to take responsibility for his actions by explaining that his two little sisters are watching and imitating him. No, Dad, explaining isn't going to do anything. He knows at a four-year-old level what's good and what isn't good, and you're going to have to basically respond to this. When my son was 4 and he pulled some stunt in preschool, he said, Andrew, what's going on? Because you can just ask him, what did you do? That's a better answer. And he said, well, Dad, some things are good to do, and some things are bad to do. But how can I know which is which until I try them all? It was everything I could do. I had to turn my face away so he did not see the grin on my face at that answer. It's a good one. It's a good one. Where's the music there, Andrew? Turn the music on. I'm getting ready to take a hard break. Thank you. Good to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program is The Doctor Is In. This is E-Person Monday. I think these are answers from kids, I believe. I don't think they made them up. Why did God make mothers? She's the only one who knows where the scotch tape is. Remember the scotch tape? My mom used to keep the scotch tape up in a shrine glass case next to the scissors, the good scissors. Oh, he said, Mom, you ever use those good scissors? No, they're there if I need them. You don't cut paper with the good scissors. Remember the ones we used to have? Rounded ones, rusted shut. Touched them, you got tetanus. Why did God make mothers? Think about it. It's the best way to get more people. To help us get out of there when we are getting born. Why did God make mothers? Alrighty. My relationships with my sister and her adult daughters has become estranged. We previously enjoyed very close relationships. All right, I'm going to stop right there. When you have a relationship that becomes estranged, and it appeared that it was a very tight, close relationship. It probably wasn't. Probably some resentments brewing, some hidden things going on. Maybe you didn't have any sense of, but it's not common. Matter of fact, pretty rare that someone writes you out of their lives when they were very, very close to you. If you were very, very close, there's a good chance this thing's going to be reconciled or talked through or something is going to be fixed. Estrangement is usually the end result of some percolating stuff. Aha! She goes on. But there has always been friction between them and my husband, and it has been on both sides. In other words, what she's saying is they don't get along with their husband. Okay. I've always tried to keep the peace, as I love them all. In January, now here you go. See, this is the kind of thing where we miscalculate, because when you've got these young adults who are of a different political perspective, maybe a different religious perspective, a different, if you want to call it, value perspective, and you send them things trying to get them to look at the other side, and when it becomes especially clear, there's always been friction, that comes especially clear, it's not going to go well. My husband sent my oldest niece an email link to a news story about the cancel culture, which was just becoming a news issue. In parentheses, she says, my husband and I are conservative, and my sister and her family are very liberal. Well, there you have it. Different views, and they don't want to hear it. And this isn't something, these two girls are in their 20s, this isn't something that just happened yesterday. This is something that's been brewing. My niece responded back with a cutting comment about his news sources, and an email war escalated between my husband and my sister and my nieces. A few days later, protests occurred at the U.S. Capitol. My sister texted me to ask me to call her because she was worried about me. She said she feared that my husband would do something violent to me. I told her what she was thinking was entirely untrue, and I asked her for examples why she'd make such wild accusations. No matter what I said, she would not believe me. She said that my nieces and her husband also do not like my husband. Ooh, doggy. I called my nieces, and I heard a lot of name-calling and examples of things that they said he did long ago when they were teenagers. I told you. I told you stuff was brewing for years and years and years and years. They never had a close relationship. It was always one that was probably civil and tolerable. But then, once again, they sort of decided, you know, I just don't like the way you think. And this is really sad. I'm seeing this everywhere. It's so sad. I've never seen anything like it. Even 20 years ago when I was still a shrink, I did not see this. This breaking up of families over viewpoints. It's terrific. It's horrific. It's awful. Politics? Religion? COVID? Vaccinations? It has just turned people toward each other in a vicious way. I'm shocked. People that you thought were your friends or you thought were supportive family members have turned. And my experience has been that those folks who have traditional values or simply resist the media narrative that they are supposed to believe are the ones most attacked. Now, I've heard people say, it goes both ways. It does, but there's been some surveys that have been done, and one survey I recall in particular, that those people who call themselves liberal are much less likely to want to have a friendship or any kind of contact with people that are conservative, as opposed to conservatives being more willing to have a relationship with someone who thinks differently. Okay. My husband does not recall those situations, and the accusations were not anything immoral or serious in nature. Well, probably he doesn't like who he is. Okay, that's one of the big things about criticism. Not that you did anything wrong. I just don't like what you did. It's not the way I would do it. Now, boy, I'll tell you what, this just inflamed it further. I then sent letters to each of them, telling them that they had hurt me deeply by attacking my husband. Now, they're not going to say, oops, sorry, didn't mean to do that, Auntie. Oh, no, I knew they were going to react bad. I haven't read any further on this, but that would be my guess at this line. They hurt me deeply, and the only way our relationship could be mended would be to follow biblical principles. Well, wait a minute, they don't follow biblical principles. And to have them talk with me and my husband to address their concerns and hurts and seek reconciliation and forgiveness. My husband was in 100% agreement. I also said until we get the situation resolved, they would not be welcome to stay with us when they come to visit our mother, grandmother. They live several hundred miles away. I received letters back saying, we love you and you are welcome at our home at any time. I sent more letters saying how hurt I was about the false accusations about my husband and calling him unkind names and asking them again to reconcile. There has been no response. I love them very much, would like to have relationships with them in the future. My husband and I are willing to forgive if they will apologize to us. However, they have made no moves towards any of this and are not initiating communication. Well, I got to tell you, if you're going to have a relationship with them, you're going to have to just give it up. In other words, forget being apologized to. Forget reconciliation. Probably going to have to act like none of it ever happened as best you can. Because they do not want to do what you wish. I'm trying to get on with my life, but I still struggle with sadness and anxiety about this whole mess. My only thought is to continue to pray and send cards and notes once in a while to express my love for them and a desire for reconciliation. It depends what you mean by reconciliation. If it means they're going to sit down and say, gee, we're sorry what we did, we regret what we did, that's not going to happen, I don't think. You're going to have to just allow them, because they think they're justified. You're going to have to allow them to say, we did nothing wrong in what we did. Your hubby deserved it, because he is who he is, and we don't like who he is. So at this point, you're going to have to look at this and say the relationship is either very cool, and somehow, some way, maybe we'll see them when they come to town to visit grandma. But short of that, I would probably give up the whole idea that they, one, have to apologize, two, have to recognize what they did, and three, are going to seek some form of reconciliation and let bygones be bygones, because it just doesn't sound like it, and that's sad. And unfortunately, that is so much of American generational family life today. I'm Dr. Ray.
Food for the Journey, Sister Ann Shield.
Are you fully convinced that what God has promised He is able to do in your life and in your family? If you're not convinced, you need to ask God, increase my faith, help me to grow in faith. Brothers and sisters, it's essential. The world around us is becoming more topsy-turvy. It's lost its moorings. We're not anchored in the truth. So take a look. Take a look at yourself and say, where am I fuzzy in this area? Or where am I definitely off track? You don't have to despair. You just need to say, all right, I see it. I'm going to turn to you, Lord, and ask that you would give me faith that I may see more clearly what's the right course to take. What are the right priorities to stand on? God is in Christ. His life, His death, His resurrection made your life eternally possible. It validates your life. You are worth something. No matter how deep of a sinner we are, or how great of a sinner we are, if we hear the grace of God and respond to it and return, our life is infinitely valuable.
Sister Ann Shields gives you food for the journey, weekday mornings at 6:45 and again at 11:30 on 990 Ave Maria Radio. We'll be right back.
Okie dokie. Dr. Ray, don't have time for any detailed e-persons. So, let's see what we got here for a short one. Every time I get on the phone, my children, ages 9 and 5, start to misbehave. They'll fight, tattle on each other, and interrupt me. Because my attention is elsewhere, they take that as a license to do as they please. Not only is this frustrating, it's embarrassing. I'm sure the person on the other line thinks I have no control over my children. One of the more telling, ironic things that I receive is when someone calls me to set up an appointment regarding some parenting guidance, and as they are talking with me, you hear the chaos in the background as they turn and yell and futilely try to correct their children. I'm on the phone. Just stop it. Okay, Dr. Ray, what were you saying? So, I usually suggest to parents in situations like this, there's a number of things you could do, but this is one I would suggest, that when you're on the phone, you do not carry on a dual conversation. You don't attempt to talk to the person on the other end while you attempt to calm and discipline and control the children. Excuse yourself. Quietly excuse yourself from the phone. Put the kids in their rooms for the rest of the call so you will have peace. Now, I would imagine that it's not that simple. That's part of the problem I have when a lot of times we can make suggestions, we have to always take it a step further and say, what happens if the kids resist our suggestion? So, for example, if they, one, refuse to go to their rooms because, well, you're on the phone, what are you going to do about it? Or two, they go to their rooms, but so what? They come out 12 seconds later. Big deal. What are you going to do about it? So I would probably tell them, take a moment when you're not on the phone and say, this is what I'm going to do. I got a new house phone rule. Here it is. When I get on the phone, you are to be quiet and respectful and not interrupt me, and no pantomimes and no writing letters sticking them under my nose and no jumping jacks trying to get my attention. I will put you in your room immediately. You cannot come out until I come to get you. If you refuse or you come out, then for the rest of the day, you have no privileges. I will just take them all away. None. Zero, zip, nada. Which means if we're going to go somewhere, you're going to kind of watch where we're going because you ain't going to get to do it when we get there. If we're going to grandma's for ice cream, or we're going to grandma's for dinner and she has great dessert, you don't get any. Or whatever you decide. This is your new phone rule. And parents will say to me, well, how long do I have to do this? And I'll say, well, I don't know, maybe 10 times. 25 times? 75 times? I really don't know. That'll be $80, please. And it really doesn't matter how many times you're going to do this. The point is you're going to do what you said, and you're going to make it stick. And if the children refuse your initial consequence, your response is going to be much more significant. Because it's one thing to act up when you're a kid. Kids act up all over the place. I got that. But when they defy your authority, when they refuse to accept your rules and your backup consequences, that's ratcheting it up 10 times. That's the reason most people come to my office. It's not that the kids are acting up and they accept their consequences. If you've got some 6-year-old that goes to the corner every time you tell them, those people are not going to come to my office. The ones who come to my office are the ones who can't get the kid to go to the corner or stay in the corner or not melt down when he goes to the corner or yell and scream when he goes to the corner or kick the corner or punch the wall. Those are the ones who come to my office because the child is not accepting the discipline. So, given that, that's what I would suggest, and I think that will go a very, very long way in helping you to get peace when you are on the phone so that you can call me and we can set up appointments. I'm Dr. Ray, and I so very much appreciate your calling me and spending this time with me on The Doctor Is In on ePerson Monday. And I thank Andrew Krucek on that end. So, good Lord permitting, I'll see you tomorrow. walk with God, hold your kids tight by the hand.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.